The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back to the Michael Steele podcast. I'm Michael Steele, and we are having, I think, for me, I don't know about the rest of y'all, but for me, a very, very engaging conversation with Nicole Hannah Jones and her upcoming Hulu special, 6-part docuseries, The 1619 Project. So you had in your work in writing, you talk about being in high school at Waterloo, Iowa.
Iowa, come on, don't do me like that. Iowa. one of those states over there. I get that.
One of those states Idaho, somewhere.
Idaho, Ohio.
No. I knew it was Iowa. I don't know why Ohio or whatever that was coming out came out. But talking about that one semester elective called the African American Experience, tell us what that experience was for you and what it opened up inside of you, probably for the first time.
Yes. So my high school, I was, even though I grew up in Iowa, there were still enough Black folks there to segregate us. So I was.
So now y'all couldn't go to the Tasty Freeze as freely as you wanted to.
Right. I was part of a busing program. And so I went to a white high school in a white part of town, and this high school offered a one semester Black studies course. It was an elective. And I talk about how, you know, in that one class, that one semester, I learned more about Black people in the United States and the world than I'd learned my entire life, and how I felt really angry because all those years when I thought we didn't learn anything about Black folks because Black people must not have done much for us to learn about. You know, looking back on that, I realized how much we are shaped by the silences, how it's not just what we're taught that's teaching us something, but all of the things that we're not taught about are also teaching us something about the world. So this class for a young Black girl in a very white state was truly transformative for me. It made me realize two things. One, that there was a lot that Black people had done that we could learn about. And two, that what we were being taught was not all that there was to know. It wasn't history. It was what people who believed they knew what was best for us to learn had decided we should know. And it really started my lifelong quest to learn as much of this history as possible. Nerdy Nicole, I was extremely nerdy back then, would ask that teacher, Mr. Dow, to give me books to read on my own because I just couldn't soak in enough. And that's, you know, he gave me the book Before the Mayflower by Lerone Bennett, which is where I learned about the date 1619. So I think what's clear is that class put me on the path to do the type of work that I've done and to produce the 1619 Project. And so I see why for someone like Ron DeSantis in Florida, AP history, African-American history, and teaching little kids about a more accurate rendering of America, why that scene is so dangerous, because certainly it put me on my path.
So let's unpack that a little bit more, because I was struck when the New York Times produced the 1619 Project. I still have the original New York Times Magazine version of that, and footnotes, cliff notes, all kinds of notes in it. So a couple of things. Giving context to this work that came out in 2019, by 2020, the California Department of Education was adding the 1619 Project to the curriculum. There was reaction to that. Former President Trump at that time noted that if that were true, if they were going to do that, then federal funding would be cut off from the California school system. Shortly after that, his administration announces the 1776 Commission, which goal was, I guess, to develop a patriotic curriculum, whatever the hell that meant. But then you've referenced Ron DeSantis in Florida getting past legislation in 2021 that barred teachers from actually teaching your work, from actually teaching critical race theory, from actually sharing the materials that you had gathered and learned from as a young high school student, that opened up this new vista of learning and opportunity and looking at America for you. All of that now we can't do. Did you have any idea that the reaction to that, to that little girl's awakening around this idea, oh, this happened in 1619, not 1870, right, whatever, that the reaction would be the way it was? And how does it make you feel in one sense? I mean, not that emotion really drives any of this for you per se, but at a certain level, you got to go, is it me or did everybody get up on the wrong side of the bed? What?
You know, no, I clearly couldn't have imagined any of this, frankly. I knew that, I mean, I'm not naive. I knew that there would be, you know, Republican or conservative outrage around the 1619 Project, particularly because it's in the New York Times, and the arguments, right, we make about how foundational slavery is to, you know, the United States, and to say, well, what if we considered 1619 our founding and not 1776? Yes, of course, there was going to be disagreement. There was going to be outrage. And by then, you know, I'd already become enough of a target amongst conservatives to know what that was going to look like. Nothing like what would happen after the project came. So I wasn't surprised by that, but I've certainly been surprised by the duration of it. I didn't expect that it would spawn all of these waves of book bans and legislation. I didn't think the president of the United States would care, frankly, about, you know, a work of journalism in the New York Times.
Can I just tell you, he really didn't. He wouldn't know 1619 from 1916. He would, right, have no clue of it. But because there is the upside of creating a villain, yes, and you are the perfect villain for Donald Trump. You're a Black, smart woman. Mm. So, you don't get more villainous than that in his world, as we've seen of how he's treated April Ryan and,
that's right,
and other Black women professionals politically and otherwise.
Yes.
But I mean to cut you off, but that I just yes, want for the record to be clear that this work in a lot of these conservative circles is not a studied work by, that's any right, of these individuals. They're not applying critical thinking or critical theory to anything that you are suggesting or have identified historically. So this is all pure bullshit reaction to a work that affronts their sense of whiteness and what that means for them as Americans. And I think, yes, the more honest we are about what they're doing, and I try to be inside, and that's one of the reasons why I don't leave the party, because I know someone's got to keep the light of honesty showing here. They're saying, look, there are conservatives like me who are down with 1619 because that's my history. That's my story as a Black Republican, as a Black man. That's part of my story, too. I can't sit here and go, well, she don't know what she's talking about, right? Because the white boys think that way. And so this is the tension that yeah. your work brings out, not just in terms of national focus, but also internally. Yeah. And you see that backlash reaction to it, which I have to admit, it makes me smile a little bit because it's like my mama used to say to me, yeah, they just showing their ass, right? Right?
Yeah, listen, on the one hand, I've always been clear that the project is not above critique. And
right.
we are making an argument and you don't have to buy the argument nor agree with the argument. We never pretended this was a straight news project, right? We are, our facts are correct, but we're harnessing them the facts to make a particular argument about the United States. And maybe you buy the argument, maybe you don't. So that was never the problem. And I would never have the hubris to produce something like this and think everyone has to agree with it or there's something wrong with them. No,
right.
you don't. But what I do expect is that you actually have read it before you comment on, you know, how it's wrong and that it's trash. And I also don't believe in a free society that you try to ban things that you just don't like, that,
right.
that you don't use the power of the state to legislate against ideas and works you don't like. If you have a better argument, make it. I mean, that's why Trump created the 1776 Commission. It's not my fault. It wasn't a good argument and it wasn't well done, but that's what you do. So I don't mind the contention and actually, you know, the good faith critique we use to revise the project into book form. We addressed it, right? And there's a part of me, I think this is dangerous because I do believe that authoritarian societies are the types of societies that yes. ban books and ideas and target journalists and target creatives. We know that it's now become part of a larger propaganda campaign to use race, you know, for political gain. And that's very dangerous to me. And there are educators who have lost their jobs, libraries that have literally closed, small town libraries that have closed, depriving their citizens of really important resources in a democracy. So I don't want to downplay the danger. But I also have to say, I take it as a great point of pride.
Yeah.
That you could produce a work of journalism that would have these people so scared and afraid, right? And yes, does Donald Trump know anything that was written in the 1619 Project? That's doubtful.
Right.
But has he helped spread 1619 into the national lexicon? Absolutely,
yeah.
right? Every time he has tweeted about it or now whatever he does on Truth Social, even his followers know that date.
Yes.
They know that that date is the start of American slavery. And so, you know, I couldn't really ask for more. Thank you. Thank
you. You scared them, that's for sure. So I'm going to let you get out of here because I know you got to go catch a plane. But I just want to run through so folks get a sense of what the docuseries yeah. touches on. And so you start out with the conversation, your personal story there. And we've talked a little bit about that. Then you kind of move into this, the construct of race as a political invention,
yes.
that sort of, is out there to create it to support white supremacy. So you get into that in an episode. Then you, one of my favorites, you get into that side where our spirit is yeah. alive and the most vibrant. When you talk about, you know, the musicians, the social connections that we've made, how we've changed this country culturally to embrace a lot of what Black Americans' experience is and had lived out through our music, for example.
Yeah.
And so you talk about that. You get into you know, the labor battles of employees, sort of the workforce piece, and how that story is sort of the bedrock of American capitalism and the role that we've played there. And then you get into policing. And so you touch on all of these things that touch on us. And the one thing that I took away from going through each of these episodes is a certain national mythology about race, about Black people, about white people. What is your takeaway of what our national mythology is, and how that is kind of driven many of the historical storylines that have played out in this country? And finally, what would it mean to reframe our understanding of U.S. history if we actually did embrace 1619 as the country's origin story?
So what to me, and yes, the way you described exactly what we're trying to do is like these pillars of American identity that we don't even really question, right? We are the greatest democracy in the history of the world. Capitalism is the freest economic system in the history of the world, that we are the most equal nation, that race is real, right? That this is a real thing, and that there's a hierarchy that in some ways was inevitable. We try to tackle all of these ideologies because what we understand is that we pick up these messages and we don't even know how we know them. We don't even know where they come from. And so we just believe them to be true. And that allows us then to maintain a country that I think where all of us, most of us are harmed, right? Like the inequality, the fact that most Americans or millions of Americans can't go to the doctor if they're sick, unless they have a job that offers it. We're the most carceral nation in the world, like all of these things that we just kind of accept, they were built upon something. And yet we're not taught what they were built upon. And so I think we are incapable really of solving our society's most vexing issues and becoming the society of our highest ideals because we have no idea what built it. We don't really understand our society, even though we think we do.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Retaliation with Julie Roginski is a weekly podcast focused on the stories of women who have spoken truth to power and have persevered despite the costs. It shares the experiences of courageous people who have sometimes been celebrated, but too often castigated for standing up for themselves and for others. Each week, I examine the structures, systems, and culprits responsible for perpetuating and promoting workplace toxicity. You'll hear stories from female celebrities, music label executives, politicians, police officers, and many others as we examine the cultural reevaluations, policy changes, and legal steps that can finally bring an end to the ongoing attack on women in this country and around the world. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.